Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Valerie Parker Hagen, and I have my co-host.
And good evening to you. What a beautiful day it is on this first Tuesday in the month of November. And I'm excited about what's happening already.
Yes, it's November 2nd today, and it's been election day for several states. So hopefully those of you that had elections going on in your area, that you took advantage of that and exercised your right to vote, your voices to be heard. You know, we're big advocates on voting. You know, so many people fought for us to have the right for our voices to be heard. And a lot of people said, oh, our vote don't matter. It won't make a difference. But yes, it does. The more people that think it doesn't matter, that defeats everything that our ancestors fought for us to be able to do.
And you're so right, Dr. Val, because the fact blood, sweat, and tears were shed for that right. And when I think about the late Congressman John Lewis, and I think about the fact of him and so many others being beaten there on that Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, that was only the beginning of the fight that allowed us to have this opportunity. And the reason it's such a great privilege is because it allows our voice to be heard. You know, in this country, so often our voices are minimized because we don't make enough money. We're not, you know, we're not the right color. We're not that. We're not this. But because there were those that was willing to go the last mile of the way, we have that right and that privilege. And it's almost an insult to them, an insult to all who gave their lives for us not to vote. So as you say, we're very big on this show here on voting. We've had guests in time past to give us the whole process and procedures and things. And we're big on it because what we understand is that, you know, our votes, especially in midterm elections and these off-year elections, are critical because it do impact the outcome of so many other things in our daily lives.
Yeah, I wish that we had time to elaborate and talk about the importance of voting in these smaller settings, because people are just so caught up on voting for the president, but they don't realize that it's these small votes that controls our state, it controls our city, our immediate cities. So I hope that those of you listening in will read up and study and be familiar with your area so that you can exercise your right to vote.
Well, absolutely. You know, and speaking of voting, I think about the fact that it took lawmakers to enact things like the Violence Against Women Act, to exercise things like the Office of the Office of Violence Against Women, and not only that, so many other things that have happened because people voted. They elected the right people that would take that fight and that cause all the way to the White House, all the way to the Capitol. And had not those acts been passed and folks had voted on it, our guests tonight might not have found justice, might not have found, if you would, relief or refuge. And so our votes matter, and we need to understand that the power of vote is the nucleus of our democracy.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing that, Dr. J. And you know, your nonprofit, Destiny by Choice, and Minds from the Soul of a Woman, we stand firm on our convictions and what it means for us to be free, for us to be able to move forward and also be liberated from those abusers and oppressors of our lives, not only for women, but also for men. We deserve the right to live and live freely without fear, without being succumbed by predators that stalk and steal the innocence of our children. You know, a lot of times we go through domestic violence and sexual abuse from little ages. You know, sometimes newborn babies are being sexually abused by relatives and sometimes even their parents because of the drug abuse. They get so distorted in their reality that they would put such a, I can't even think of the word, it's just so troublesome to me, the way that they feel that they can do sexual acts to young children. You know, you have all these big people walking around, grown adults walking around that don't have a problem with being your sexual partner, but yet you feel the need to assault and molest children. And we have two guests that were with us last week, Dr. J. And I thought that it was necessary for us to bring them back because so much was left unsaid and there was so much more than needed to be said and explain the process, because there are people that are going through traumas right now that have been through a situation, but they're still locked in their emotional cage and haven't been able to live productive lives or even be in a productive relationship because of their traumas from their past. So I'm so delighted that we have our first guest, Natasha. She was here with us last week. Natasha, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Good evening, everyone. How are you? Thank you for having me back. I'm delighted to be back here. When I got the text, I was like, okay, you know what? Maybe I'm not done. And like you said, a lot was left unsaid. We didn't explain how we got to the point for the healing process. So now, today, we can elaborate more on how the process, what it took to get to that process.
Okay, could you share a little bit about your story? Because there were some that missed it last week and haven't listened to the first show, and they're tuning in for the very first time. So if you could give a little bit of your story and how that process was for you, you know, in the beginning, and how you walked your way through it.
In the beginning of the process, it all started as a little girl. Being molested, I'm not going to go definitely into the stories, but being molested at a young age. It all started not being loved by my mother. And she preferred actually her boyfriend at the time instead of me. So she was sending me to different places. And as we all know, as being a girl, a daughter shouldn't have many homes. So she decided to throw me off somewhere else because, you know, the boyfriend at the time did not want me there. I couldn't play with my siblings because they were not actually my father's children. So it was a lot of things that were taking place, and she dropped me off to my aunt. And from there, you know, that's the only time I actually experienced a mother's love up until 87, 1987, when I came here to the U.S. It was one of my worst. I always say, till this day, sometimes I say, I wonder if she would have left me in the Bahamas, what it would have been like. So from being here, it was just from a little girl at 7 years old being molested up until I was 14 years old. So it came to the point where it was something that I got accustomed to because I tried to let my voice be heard. It was always, you're not telling the truth, you're a liar, and you're a liar. So it became to a point where I got quiet. So I never said anything. I got quiet. And I remember in 1996, I'm sorry, I'm talking about my second daughter now. 1996, actually the first time I was actually sexually active on my own, I got pregnant. Just that one incident, I got pregnant with my daughter. And from there, I never look at it as a mistake. I think that was God's way of getting me out of my situation. I had to go from one bad situation to another bad situation. Being pregnant at that age, my mother said, you know what, two adults cannot live in a house, so what are you going to do? She put all my stuff out. I'm 15. I'm trying to figure out, what is a 15-year-old going to do? At the time, I was not a U.S. citizen or a resident, so I had no status here at the time. And so I was still trying to figure out, what am I going to do? I couldn't work, whatever. But I ended up being homeless. I ended up being homeless, pregnant with my daughter. I was sleeping behind a Winn-Dixie, like I mentioned last time. And I was still trying to go to school in the process of being pregnant with a child. You know, things got hard. And sometimes when it was cold and I didn't want to be out, I would say, can you please let me sleep at your house just for the night? I promise you, I'll be gone in the morning. Because a lot of people didn't want to interfere with my mother because my mother would have told them, why you let Natasha live here? So from there, I just had to figure it out. And that was the time I had to realize that, look, Natasha, you're an adult now. I have somebody's life that I'm responsible for. I'm an adult. But I went through a lot of hard times before I got to the point where I'm at right now. And I cannot say it was easy, but only thing I can say it was worth it. It wasn't easy, but it was worth it because I was determined to get through. I was determined to leave that behind me. But of course, I got pregnant again in 1998. Well, actually, 97. I had my daughter in 98. So now I, you know, I have two kids and don't know what to do. Still not at this point. And I remember telling their father that I'm pregnant. And he said to me, well, I cannot have no kids. So you need to find those children's father. So now I'm still a minor. And I was like, well, I did think about getting rid of the baby. I was not of age to get rid of the baby. So I ended up with two kids. And two kids from there, which wasn't enough. And that's when I started to experience sexual abuse. Now I started to experience physical and mental abuse. So I was getting hit. And now it was a thing where he was always playing with my mind. Nobody would want to because you have two kids and this and that, and they're not my kids. So I dealt with a lot. So now that I have the kids to fight for, I had to make sure I make it happen. I made ends meet where I would get under the table jobs and do things. And mind you, I'm going through all this abuse and I still had to hold my head up. So it went on for a long time through my 20s and 30s with me fighting to find out who am I. I never could have found out who am I because I went through so much. So now I started to talk, like I said, to that little girl. That little girl was still dying. I was trying to put that movie in the back of my head and say, this never happened to me. I'm making it up. So now I begin to trick myself into thinking I was lying because that's what was said to me throughout my years. And, you know, and one day I had to sit down. I'm like, look, I'm not well. I wasn't messed up in the head to say I'm crazy, but I'm not well. I'm not well because when I would see little things, it would trigger me. So that's how I knew I was not there yet. I was not there yet. I had to go back and deal with that little girl named Natasha. And when I dealt with that little girl, emotions was all over the place. Everybody that ever sexually molested me came up that I even forgot about. It was just a process.
Now, how did you? Yeah, I want to interject. You said that you had to deal with Natasha, which meant dealing with yourself. Now, did you have someone to walk you through that process, or you just had an aha moment where you stopped and said, I need to fix this?
I had to stop and say, I need to fix it. I did it on my own because some of the things that took place, they were embarrassing, and I didn't want to go through it with anybody, and I don't think anybody would have understood what I went through. So that's why I took it upon myself and say, I got to heal that little girl. Because that little girl inside of me was still dying, even though I looked like a physical adult. So I was still dying on the inside. So I just took 3 months. I stayed in my room and I healed myself. With the help of that Bible, I was led to scriptures by God. And I had faith that I was going to be healed because that's what I was asking God for. I need to be healed. So I couldn't even have a relationship without thinking that this person don't want to be with me. They just want to use me. I was no good anyway. My mother told me, you know, everything that my mother said to me played back. Everything that my mother said to me played back, even from calling names and everything else. So I took some time out, 3 months in my room. I just got up, drank tea. And in the process, I was in a cab and I stayed in my room. I stayed in my room and I healed myself. And I remember when I came out of it, everybody was like, what's going on with you? I was happier. I could actually communicate to you. I can actually talk to a guy and say, my thing was if a guy would come and talk to me, my first intention would be like, oh, you want to have sex with me? That's all you want. So I had to get out of that. Now I can have this conversation. But the key for me to get to that healing process was the Bible and faith. And I had to forgive everybody that wronged me. And I never got to the point to heal myself until I started forgiving these people for what they've done to me. So with that alone, that was a process. It wasn't an easy process. Because how can you forgive somebody who had sex? Pretty much, I consider myself at the time a sex slave. I'm a kid. I'm a child. Mm-hmm. What do I know? You know, and it's like, Mom, are you going to let this happen? My mom would say, well, you're not paying. He's paying my bills. So she would try to, whatever I was telling her, she would dismiss it and worry about self. And later on in life, I understood why she did that.
But no. Did she ever own the fact that you were being sexually abused?
In May of 2018, she was in hospice, and we had a conversation. And she the one who brought it up. I didn't bring it up, and she was apologizing. She said, I'm sorry that I never believed you. She said, I'm sorry for everything, because I actually see, you know, with all of my children, you the one that loved me the most. And she said, even though I was treating you bad, you still love me. I still love my mom no matter what. Even though she, you know, dismissed me, even though sometimes she would say, oh, I wish you were dead, I would still go and love on her, because the Bible told me to obey my mother. So even though she did things that were wrong, but it's because of her that I'm here. So I'm grateful for that. She gave me life. You know, God, you know, created me in her womb. So therefore, I forgave her for that. If I can own something, it was because of her. And I find that a lot of people that I would talk to say, I'm not going to forgive her. I'm not going to do this. Or, you know, they don't want to forgive that person. I'm like, look, you're holding on to something that this person probably already moved on and not even worried about you. You're killing yourself while this person is moving on with life and living their best life at that. So why are you doing that to yourself? You're hurting yourself. That person is not hurting at all. You're hurting yourself. So that's why I tell everyone, it's not going to be an easy journey. But if you want to live the life that God has promised you, you have to forgive and move on.
Natasha, you have a very strong anchor in the fact that you talk about forgiveness. And I want to be clear, because every victim of domestic violence or sexual violence don't find it that easy to forgive. As a matter of fact, from a clinician standpoint, we often say to people, we can't force you to forgive. We don't want to tell you to forgive early. But you came to this conclusion on your own. You, after all that you did in your own soul searching and all of these things, you found that as to being the catalyst that brought you healing and brought you a relief inside of it. And that's a major thing, because in fact, most of the time we're guided by our parents. We're guided in our faith. We're guided from that standpoint. But in your situation, not having a mother who did not believe you, having a mother who was abusive in her own way by doing so, and then not having a father on the other side to help guide you, you were the epitome of the scripture of God being a mother to the motherless and a father to the fatherless.
Right. And
so my question to you is this. Your journey out was you finding yourself in the presence of God and asking him to heal you, And his answer to you was, your first step in being healed is to forgive.
Yes, I had that was the key. And I even have a book called Forgiveness is Key, Let It Go. That's what helped me throughout this journey. And I had to do it. Not to say I didn't want to do it. My flesh didn't want to do it. But in order for me to get where I needed to be, that's what I had to do. And let me tell you, everything that I needed was in that key of forgiveness. I had to do it.
How does it affect your daughters, being that you went through that trauma? How was it raising your daughters? And now that they know your story, what effect has it had on them?
I waited until they got to find out, to know about it, because I didn't want them walking around with hating others. So I kept it away from them. But they were very, very sheltered. My kids were not allowed to go to people's house. Only sometimes the grandma and if it's in the night, which not my mother, their father's mother, I would have to be there too. I raised them very sheltered. It's now that I'm talking about it, this is after my mother passed, that they are actually knowing the inside details of what took place. So I kept it away from them as much as I can. And I raise them in a way and I tell them, if anybody looks at you, tell mommy. If anything you feel like, you know, you're not comfortable, tell mommy. Let mommy know. I want to know everything that's going on. So we built this relationship of, you know, we would even talk about things that you won't even think mother would talk to daughters about. I would talk to them because I want to know. I don't want them to have that void that I had as a child, you know, because I'm, you know, I don't believe them or I'm just left out. I want to know everything. So.
Do you think it's impacted the way that they see, the way they might see males? Or, I mean, I know that even in your case, that though God has healed you and brought you through that part, and part of your forgiveness was forgiving those who did so, but did it have an effect on you far as the way you see men, or are you apprehensive about that, or do your girls feel like, man, you know, I mean, because that it wouldn't be far-fetched if it was the case. But I could only imagine having gone through something so traumatic. You know, kids are amazing. Kids can be amazing.
They're resilient.
They're resilient.
A lot more kids resilient also now.
Look at you and say, "Well, mom, when are you gonna start dating anyone?" I wonder, are they reserved from saying that because of what you've gone through?
Well, actually, it did before my healing process. It did. True. In reference to a guy and stuff like that, it was, I always thought it was about them. So if you would talk to me, I'll tell you, hey, look, you want to have sex with me? Because you don't know me, but you want to have. So that was my first reaction because that's what I was used to. Okay. So it affected my relationship. And I just didn't trust nobody. Especially if I have to be with my daughters, I'm always watching to make sure that you're not looking at my child. So I dealt with a lot of things. I dealt with a lot of things, but my issue is you want to have sex with me. And I would refuse because I didn't want nobody looking at my daughters. So I didn't want to live with no men after their father. Now I'm in a relationship, but this is all God's plan because only one thing I know that I deal with, and I have to say it, I deal with you touching me and you don't tell me first. I get defensive, and it's because of what I went through. I have a habit, it can be 100 degrees, I will cover myself. That's my defense mechanism. I would still cover myself from head to toe. So it can be hot. And my daughters would be like, mom, why do you do that? I said, you would never understand. But I do that because that's my protection. I feel like that's a source of protection for me.
Gotcha.
Wow. Yeah. How can individuals connect with you and hear more about your story and also the products that you have and services you may offer?
I do have Amazon. One of them is Forgiveness is Key, Let It Go. And then I also have the prayer journal that I use on my journey of healing. So, I mean, Jesus is real. I mean, the Lord is real. However,
He is.
Those scriptures I use, they took me through this healing process. And I also have a book as well, Pain with No Scars. It gives you a little bit about my story. And the reason I say a little bit because I want individuals to have access to me, where you can actually talk to me. Because sometimes reading a book is okay. But when you have that access to that person can elaborate more with you, you have that sense of comfort. You know what? I'm going to get, you know, that healing process that I need. So they can get those books on Amazon. And also, if anybody wants to reach me, they can reach me at painwithnoscars@gmail.com. And also my cell phone number, which is my cell phone. That's what I do for, I have a phone just for that, okay. For people to call and actually you know, if they want to talk, you know, they just give me the heads up and I make plans for them.
Yeah, because have them just email you, and then if you want to give your phone number out, then that way they can, you can deal with them personally like that instead of getting a lot of random calls.
Okay, so it's painwithnoscars@gmail.com. They can reach me and I will respond.
Thank you so much for sharing it, and stay in the studio so that we can connect with you again and ask you some further questions.
Okay.
Thanks so much. Yes.
Wow, Dr. J, I still am like, it just takes my breath away. I hold my breath thinking about it, because as she tells her story, I walk through it with her, especially I have some of my own traumas going on, and God is definitely real and he is a deliverer. And forgiveness is definitely the key, because it only imprisons you. That's why I wrote my second book, Unveiling Secrets from the Heart, Forgiving Your Past to Free Your Future, because we have to forgive. And it's true. I even wrote in the book that a lot of times we're holding things that people did to us and they don't even remember it themselves, or they're oblivious and moved on, or have become more enlightened and aware of their instance, the traits that they had in their youth to now they're older and they want to bury them. And we still walking around with those pains from something somebody said or something somebody did to us. And it has affected and shaped our whole lives. And they don't have a clue.
But you know, the sad part about that is that you're right, because there is a blindness that comes. But most of the time that blindness is there because of the fact that issue has not been brought back up to them by anyone. The victim is oftentimes silenced. You know, they've been silenced by threats. They've been silenced.
So they haven't been confronted.
So they haven't been confronted. So these individuals go on with their life. They settle into a life. Sometimes they continue doing that type of things. Other times they stop. But the reality is, what I say to any person, perpetrator, and in this case, I'm going to say men, we have to consider the damage that we leave. We have to consider, first of all, we took advantage of someone. We took advantage of their innocence. We violated them in every sense of the word. We stole their sense of normalcy from them. And we go on as if it didn't happen. But the reality is that we abuse. We have shattered someone's life. And we have to be able to confront that at some point and be able to say, listen, I'm sorry. You know, what I did was egregious. And not that we make excuse for them. But in so many of these cases, we find that the perpetrators, they themselves have lived life of transgenerational trauma, unattended trauma in their own lives. And so here's the power, here's the hurting, trying to gain power, and they take advantage of other people. But it is so important to me that we find a place of healing, that we find a place of healing, and that to the perpetrator, that they must understand what they've done is egregious, and they need to be held accountable.
Gotta be held accountable.
Because when I listen to stories like Natasha and like Reverend Adrell, the thing that really stands out with me is this, the damage that is left behind. How does it affect their outlook in the future? You know, and I don't mean to digress, but it's nothing like even me as a man coming across a woman who's been so badly damaged. What do you mean? Not that they should be shamed, but they've been so badly damaged emotionally and everything that they don't know how to receive a good man. They don't know how to receive love. They don't know
how to receive. That happens a lot.
And that happens a whole lot. And it happens in such a way that everything that they need is right in front of them, but they'll never be able to receive it because the damage is such in a way that their norm is an abnormal relationship. So the dysfunctionality for them is more where they feel the sense of wanted. And so when you bring calm and you bring functionality and you bring love, it's almost like, no, that's not what I want because I can't feel that. And those are the type of things that people are left shattered and broken. People are left that way. So I applaud Natasha because, you know, she's gone through that phase and God is still healing her and things. But her first step was the forgiveness part, because forgiveness is necessary. You know, that's our prayer to answer. Forgive us our debt, that which we have done, even as we forgive our debt.
Actually, her first step was taking ownership of where she was at that point in her life and saying, taking a stance, saying, I'm not going to let you dominate and rule my life. That was her first step. And then once you do that, then you'll be open to forgiving because you have to acknowledge all the pain, all the hurt that you've been through in order to get free from it. If you never own what happened and continue to put it in an emotional vault or on the back of your head like it never existed, then that proper healing can't take place.
Absolutely. But we have some victors here tonight, and we have some victorious survivors. And that's why I think your story is so critical in this day and time. Someone's listening right now, Dr. Val, and perhaps they've been suffering in silence. Perhaps they have hidden their story from many for so long. Perhaps on the outside, it looks like they've overcome and no one even known they've ever gone through. But deep down inside, they know they've been in prison to their past. So this is why tonight's show is so very crucial.
And our next guest.
Absolutely. Reverend Audra Chantel Davis Jones, once again, from stolen innocence to the victory that she now enjoys.
Good evening. I was waiting for Dr. J to introduce you since I did brought on Natasha, so I was waiting on him to bring you in. And thank you so much for agreeing to come back. You know, a lot of times it's not easy to relive, but we relive for the victory.
Yes, and it is so profound that you mention victory. The way that my book is set up, each chapter has a battle, it has a praise, and a victory. And that's one of the things that all the way throughout my journey and throughout the different things that I went through mainly kept me grounded, that I knew that I had a battle to overcome. But somehow I had to do that anyhow, praise. And praise did not come easy when somebody was beating on you and you went through stuff.
Yeah.
Praise does not come. But I knew that that was one of the things that was healing me and helping me to grow. And I know Natasha talked about forgiveness. And that's one of the things that I had to first do was to forgive myself. And the reason that I had to forgive myself is because I blamed me and it put a block there that I could not go any further. And every time I looked at myself, it was always as though I was blaming myself. And in order for me to be able to just go forward, I had to forgive myself first. And I prayed and asked God to help me to not have a heart of hardness so that I would be able to still, when the right person come along, be able to love them, still be able to have something to give someone else, you know. And so it was just really heartfelt. And that was one of the things that I made sure going through, that I would not have this hardness towards every man, you know, because every man had something. And I was able to look at it from the perspective of five or six several things that I had in mind, that I know that I cannot change an individual, but I could only change myself. And when they came in, it helped me. It really helped me to say, we're not getting not because of that, but we're not getting along because you are a smoker and I'm not going to try to do this. You are an abuser. You are an alcoholic. So these are the reasons why. And once I put those things in perspective, it really helped me to just kind of look at it so that I would not blame every man for the past mistakes. And I have a heart for love and I wanted to just be loved. And before I knew that that can happen full-heartedly, those two things had to take place. First, me forgive myself. And yes, I did have to forgive my abusers so that I can go on. It wasn't easy and it took a while. And when I got into the point of that anyhow praise, I found something, just something special, something little, something very minute to say, Lord, I praise you anyhow, so that it would help me to be able to get to the next level of claiming the victory. And once I claimed the victory, that means that I was really onto something, because I was ready to put some of those things behind me. And it is just really ironic of how you really would think that coming and going through, it was 43 years of me dealing with abuse and domestic violence at one point or another, from 9 years old to 1989. And it was after that time in doing this writing, and the day that I was seemed like kicked out of the bed to get into the bathroom, I ended up on the floor, and I knew that I was the only one in the room. But I felt that it was the Holy Spirit letting me know, hey, get up and write your story, because I had been procrastinating. And I'm like, no, nobody don't want to hear this story. But I know that what was said to me, who could better write your story than you can? You're the only one that can write this, and you're the only one that can grow through and share with others, because what I've brought you through is not just yours alone. And with this, it really helped me, and I started writing out prayers, I start writing out meditations, I start reading and reflecting and journaling, to the point that I did come up with another book, the namesake book of Battle Scars of Emotions. But it's the personal reflections, the prayers, the scriptures, the journaling, and gratitude. When I held on to those things, I was able to really grow through some of the traumatic situations that I was in. And it was just really difficult, you know, to just keep on going and not really realizing the pain, or just being center focused on the pain. And I was able to get through because I knew that I had to show my children strength beyond what they saw, if that makes any kind of sense.
I know part of your story was you were molested by leadership in the church. And so,
yes,
being in the church and having a pastor, minister, physically assault you,
yes,
sexually, and then having to sit there and, you know, in the midst of the service, and then you have to go there every week with your family. How was that? I mean, how were you handling that? How did you transition to be able to walk through that? And when you spoke about it and told somebody, what did people say when you talked about, or was it a known fact that this minister was doing this?
Well, actually, it was not a known fact. He had a wife, he had family, and his parsonage was right next door to the church. And I was younger then, going to church with my grandmother, and she would always say, you got to go and speak to the Reverend. I don't want to call his name. You have to go and speak to the Reverend. And the day that I rebelled against it, it was really thereafter, it was really difficult to sit and go to church. So when grandmother came to get me to come to church, I started not going, to the point that I left that denomination for a while. I really did, because I felt that, okay, this is not right. So even in my younger years, sitting there and realizing those things, and you know, even when I think about the family member and my father, it would have killed my father. Seeing him when he come around, I would run, go into the room, and believe it or not, he would come and look for me. He would come and find me, you know, and I was just like, oh my gosh, you know, Dad, can you not see this? Mom, can you not see this? And just, it just really was something very horrific. I found myself being just removing just removing away, just coming, just staying away from different situations. So if it was a family gathering that I knew as I got older and I knew that he was there, I could not do it.
Now, did your father go to church?
My father did not go to church, no.
Oh,
no.
Yeah, he would have killed my grandpa.
Yeah, he would have killed him. My father would have hurt him really bad, you know, and it was just really something that was just hard to explain. And I tried to share it with my mom, and she would just like, shh, we'll talk about it later. And my mother was very sweet, very soft spoken. I love my mother to death, but it was just certain things that I felt that she was afraid of my father. He did not abuse my mother, but he was short and loud and he made his points known. And my mother, on the other hand, was very soft spoken. And she would say, we'll talk about that later. We'll talk. And she just whispered, we'll talk about that. And I said, Sonny hurt me. She says, no, we'll talk about that later. And so she never wanted to go into detail or anything. And it was just to a point where one day, you know, because it was like, okay, here's $10. And I just threw it at her. And I says, this is what's happening and you're not seeing this. Somebody is hurting me. And then they put this, I'm giving this to you. And that's the light bulb that went off in my mother's head. That went, and so she went and approached, you know, that particular person. And it was just really horrific. But back to my healing and back to me growing, that was just something that I just really kept as just my secret weapon that I knew that I had to just keep surpassing through this, getting going through this. And eventually, it took a while for me to forgive myself. It took a while for me to just really explain to myself that it was not my fault. And as I wrote and as I continued to just write it out and cry it out and meditate through all of this, it really helped me to really be a spokesperson, to get my voice back, because my voice was silenced for a long time. And even though that my family doesn't think so, but in a lot of ways, my voice was really silent because no one ever knew. And it was just very difficult until that day that I just threw this. I said, this is what I'm worth, you know, and it just took a lot. And this is why in relationships, it's very difficult for me. I've been very independent. I didn't want anyone to just come and give me stuff. I want them to do what they're supposed to do as, you know, my husband or as my mate. But it wasn't something that I went to them and says, oh, I need my nails done. Oh, I need my hair done. Oh, I need this. Yes, my husband, perhaps, but I never let anyone do anything like that for me. And I always say that I'm not petty and I'm not cheap. And that was just something that I had a hard time receiving. I didn't know how to receive. Although I knew that there was still so much in me to give, to love, and I did not want to give up on love, I did not want that to be the reason why I was bitter and could not have room when it came, when the real love came. And so I do still have difficulties sometimes of trust issues, and you know, there are triggers. So I cannot say that, because I think every battered woman or individual have triggers, and certain things trigger them where other things do not. And so I don't bother anybody. I don't want to hit. I don't play, but don't play with me, because that is a true trigger, you know, because you're going to get beat up. But those are just some of the things that I had to really look at. And so with what I was saying, at 43 years of dealing with the violence and going through domestic violence, it really made me start looking at myself as being special, as being beautiful, as being, just telling myself, even on the days that I did not feel those ways, even when I did not feel that someone could even love me. But I just really wanted to make sure that as I started growing, it was deliberate, it was intentional, and it was real, so that it will strengthen me. And And that is one of the words that I used. I'm not going through something, I'm growing through. And Absolutely. That kind of helped me to get to the spiritual level. And I felt that I was called for the ministry, but I ran from the ministry a long time because of this as well. And right. because of that pastor, you know, I was like, I cannot be true. But I, through all of this, I do believe that God taught me how to be true to myself. For me to
was
be
he ever
to
exposed?
No, not to my knowledge. My grandmother knew, my mother knew, but far as I know, they never exposed him to, you know, the big bishop or anything like that. That's the sad thing about it.
When I hear so many stories like yours, and especially when we start talking about leadership, you know, it's so easy for us. I mean, just say for in the church, it's easy for us to look at the secular people, you know, the movie stars and those people when they abuse their power and we have an opinion on it. Or even let's be real about it. If we were talking about the Catholic priests or whatever taking advantage, we have a conversation about it.
Right.
However, it is so difficult for us, especially in Christendom, to talk about leaders who violate members, clergy who commit sexual abuse.
Exactly.
I'm not talking about a boyfriend, girlfriend. I'm seeing you right. by a woman on the side. That's not right neither. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying to take advantage of someone, number one, physical force, sexual force, manipulation, using power and position. When we use our power to P-R-E-Y, when we should be P-R-A-Y, not only violated God, we violate the individual. So your grandmother, your mother, and all those around sometimes find it very hard to see that person in leadership. Even they can't fathom them doing those things, and yet it happens way too often.
It does.
And I say this because it takes courage.
It really, you know, it really does. And now what I do, and I'm able to just pick, oh my goodness, I'm able to just pick it out right away. I'm like, okay, no, he's not right. I protect my daughter. I just would not. So there's some men that I would not sit up under because there are things that I see in them. And I don't like for them to look at me a certain way or to disrespect my husband or to even make me feel that you're undressing me in some type of way. It's like, oh no. So I'm very careful into how I deliver and carry myself simply because I do not want that kind of attention brought to me. And one of the things that I have also discovered in the ministry and doing these things, talking about domestic violence in the church, a lot of men do not even want me to come in and talk about it. They'd rather a man come in and talk about it in a certain way. But who could tell the story better than a woman who have already experienced and have gone through it and have grown through it and is now the voice piece and an advocate, a strong survivor? And so I find that it you know, when there are a few that embrace to say, hey, I know one pastor confided in me. He says, there's someone in my church I know who beats their wives. I want you to tell the story. I want you to stand up and be bold. But a lot do not receive it for that. But here is the thing that I often tell people, because those that have been abused and then they say God allowed it, I have to tell them my story in such a way, and the way the spiritual well-being take place, you have to also have something already rooted inside of you in order to pull from. And that is what was my sustaining power. That little bit going to church early on, being drugged to church by grandma, those are the things that was inside of me that when I could not speak, when I could not even know where the verse was, it was just something that just would come out and it would heal me. All I had to do was just call on God, call on Jesus. And I'm just saying that, you know, that is not just the full answer, because I do know that it was the sustaining power from God that helped me to get through, to stay strong, to get where I am, to go through some of the things. But it was also something that we have to, as victims, and I'm speaking from that standpoint of a victim, is to go inside of yourself, and that forgiving is really essential. And the reason that I say it's forgiving is essential, you have to first start with self. And we have to learn to love upon self first, because we are taught to give this all this attention to everyone else, but not ourselves. And therefore, when we give attention to ourselves, we have a tendency to feel guilty or feel less than deserving.
How do you figure in sexual abuse and mental abuse, where people may label it as being bipolar, but actuality, it's mental trauma that individuals have gone through? And maybe Dr. J, you could chime in on that too.
Yes.
And you know, one of the things that I'm glad that you mentioned that, because right now my son is mentally ill. And when you look at the bipolar and when you look at the sexual abuse, I look at it from the standpoint of the mental trauma that one experienced from that abuse, that sexual abuse, it carries a weight nothing like the physical violence does. And it is an emotional, it tears you down mentally in such a way that you don't even know where you're going on that. And I can see the bipolar, because if you are being treated, and I say stolen, because that's what I was. I was stolen.
Stolen innocence.
My youth was stolen. My virginity was stolen. My everything was stolen and taken from me. When you look at that, and then you look at it from the standpoint of how am I going to engage in some really good, genuine, honest husband and wife sex, that the way the Bible tells us that we are supposed to, you know, love and become intimate with each other, that becomes difficult. And therefore, with the bipolar situation, as far as the mental situation, we think more on how it has made us feel in the past and what we can do and not do, to the point that it is creating a cycle within its own self. And one of the things that I feel that how the two are correlated, as far as bipolar and as far as the mental trauma that one have gone through sexual abuse or through domestic violence, it is something.
Did we kind of lose her?
Yeah, I think she froze up a little bit. So.
I don't know if she recalibrate, but what powerful information, you know, once again, talking about how that traumatic experience totally interrupts your sense of normalcy. You know, how does it, and that's something that's important for not only victims, but even for those that are listening. That's why I like for men to hear these broadcasts and see these scenes. And I like for everyone, because see, somewhere along the line, we may encounter someone who has this past. They've been sexually violated, they've been raped, they have domestic violence, and oftentimes we're trying to get through to relate to them, and we don't understand the difficulties and why we have to navigate so hard. And so when we start talking about even intimacy, the ideal of intimacy is a whole different thing now because of the violation there. From one sense, to the fact of, as you heard both Natasha say, as well as Reverend Audrell, is the fact that sense of normalcy. What does that look like now?
Because what does it look like?
Yeah, because I've not experienced normalcy. So you heard Natasha talk about the fact she doesn't like to be touched without permission. Now, here's the interesting thing. Being in this field for so many years, I've learned a lot, and I've watched a lot and been a part of a lot of research and studies and things like that. But it's something about my upbringing that always said to me, even when I was talking to someone and we're getting to know each other, is it all right that I hold your hand? Mm. And it was just that thing. Is it all right that I hold you? And I would never forget having people say, why you ask? Well, I ask because, number one, it's not my right to do so without your permission.
Yeah, you know, Alex asked me if he could hold my hand when we first started dating. And I was like,
he must have read the note.
I was like, oh, that's different. I was like, yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. And so it's important. But navigating through this, because there are times that we encounter people that are broken. And sometimes we have to know how do we love a broken person? Are we even the person to love a broken person? Because we walk in expecting a person who is broken to act as if they've never had a traumatic experience, to act like they're normal. And so you have to decide whether or not, am I the person that has the patience or the tolerance to navigate this life of this person? I like them. I think they're great. I think they're wonderful. I think that. But do I have the temperament? Do I have, once again, the patience or tolerance to deal with that? And by the same token, most of the time, it's really going to fall on the person who's trying to engage in a relationship, because the victim survivor is more than likely going to be doing that to protect himself.
Right.
What they need to protect inside of it. And, you know, hold up. I thought it was so interesting with Natasha's response, and I've heard it many times.
Yeah, we'll bring them back in the studio as well, too.
Exactly.
So that you they know, can.
She said something about the fact of, once again, she just cut through the chase. So you want to have sex with me, huh? And isn't that amazing? Because that's been the experience. And it's almost saying, I need to know, do I have value to you more than just sex?
Yes,
because absolutely. Because if I don't, let's cut through it.
And Andrea, you were finishing up something before we lost you. What was your last comment yes. you were making?
Oh, goodness. It's the weather is messing with my internet over here. But one of the things is that I am, like Tasha, very careful as to who touch me and how they touch me. Or if I'm in a mode of thinking or whatever and you walk up on me, that creates a different problem. And we were talking about the mental illness at the bipolar and how one would look at that easily like, oh, you're going crazy or something is really wrong with you, when it is the trauma that we have dealt with has yes. nothing to do with being bipolar. It has everything to do with and I call it now boundaries. Respect the boundaries, because just to touch me in a abrupt way creates something that, you know, I don't know how to deal with right now. And the same as someone walking up on me. So it is just really, really careful, really being careful as to how I'm approaching, how I approach others. And I just don't want that to become an issue. At the same time, I still made sure that I was able to, in that dysfunction part of a relationship, to try to make the relationship as normal as possible, because I know what is inside of me still to love, to share, to give, and to put myself first. That is the one thing that I've really, through all of this, like I said, it's the last 23 years, 25 years, that self-help, self-spiritual well-being, that spiritual growth has really helped me. And that helps me to be able to share with others what I've gone through with and how I was able to get over, on that other side. And it is true that people say, girl, you know, something is going on wrong with you. And it's not something wrong with you. It's just that when you know what you know and you have that trust of someone lied to you in the beginning, then guess what? You're going to always assume that whatever else is coming after that is a lie. And that is something that I know that, okay, I don't want to tolerate or want to be put myself into, because it really creates another aspect of this domestic violence, you know, the aftermath, what I call it.
Mm-hmm. And can you give your contact information so that individuals can reach out to you?
Yes, my contact information is Audrea, www.audreyalchantel.com, www.battlescarsministries.org. You could also email me at battlescarsministry@gmail.com. I also have my book that you will find on AudreyLChantel.com, Battle Scars Ministry, Battle Scars of Emotions, Divine Healing from the Scars of Life. My new book will be out soon, The Meditation, Personal Reflections, Prayers, Scriptures, and Journaling, so that it will help us to just start writing these things right on out. And that is coming out soon through Zulon. And you can also find my book on Amazon as well, Barnes and Noble. You could just Google it and you will be able to see it comes up. And Battle Scars Ministry is a nonprofit organization. And we are right now still in the launch process of accepting donations so that we can have the thrift store that's open, which is our central hub of our resource center as well as services. And we do have a little pamphlet if they want to contact me through email where they will be able to get just basic local resources. And I'm still working on getting partnerships to add to that.
That's awesome. I applaud both of you for the magnificent work you're doing. And I'm sorry that you all had to go through the experiences, but it has allowed you to be missionaries for the Lord. Pain has become my power too. I started the foundation from the soul of a woman.com regarding domestic violence. I was in a 19-year marriage of abuse. So I understand fully, and I know about being sexually abused, and I know about people coming up on you, because my favorite thing would be like, well, it's not my favorite thing, but I would always say, you need to back up off me.
That's
me standing up in my power. You can't get too close to me. You can't roll up on me like that, because mm-hmm. now I have my power. So you need to back up off me. So we're hoping that individuals listening that have went through an emotional, mental, physical, and spiritual trauma will take courage to stand up and say no more and be that person that God intended for you to do. We all have some stories to tell in our lives, some good, some bad, but people that need to be have gotten stolen innocence from a child where they've been molested and preyed upon, and it has carried them all the way to their adult life where they can't function normally in a relationship or on their jobs. And I feel so sorry that you had to go through that. We've all that are here have gone through it, except for Dr. J, I don't know, but we women that are here, we know what that feels like.
Yes.
We know how that looks. So we are watching you. So, and we will expose you.
Right. And let me say this, because my passion comes in the fact of having to be that ear, having to be that shoulder, having to be that resource for many women and children that have gone through this. Understanding, however, what it is to be emotionally and abused as well inside a relationship. You know, that's not foreign. You know, national statistics will tell you one in every nine men will be abused in their lifetime, one in seven. And abuse may not always look the same, but the hurt and pain is very dear and it's deep. And I do know that unattended trauma, unattended situations in our life oftentimes leave so much residue in our lives that it clouds our present. And that is why it is so important to continue to do these type things. And that's why, you know, I don't mind being the person, that male that have stood out here over 29 years about these issues, because in fact, I understand them greatly and I see them greatly. And so I feel the pain of sisters. I'm grateful for having grown up with six sisters and five of those sisters was older than I was. You know, I had three brothers, but it was nothing like the effect that my sisters had on me, because they taught me empathy. They taught me compassion. They taught me transparency. And as a result of that, it has been the thing that have really led my life. And I say to any brother out there, you've got to understand that we must start standing up. We must speak out against this type of abuse and control. We must examine ourselves and get rid of this toxic masculinity and begin to build a whole different world. And we as men and brothers need to stand side by side with our sisters and begin to say no more. So I go back to what one of my programs is with Destiny by Choice. It's man up, stand up against domestic violence. And that's what we have to do.
And the National Domestic Violence Hotline is 1-800-799-7233. That's 1-800-799-7233. And the National Sexual Assault Hotline is 1-800-656-4673. That's 1-800-656-4673 for the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Thank you again, ladies, for joining us and sharing your stories, being transparent, because a lot of times when you go through situations in your life, the enemy in within always tells you that you're the only one and that you're not worth it. And you are so worth it, and you are so loved and so appreciated. And I thank you so much for your courage.
Thank you so much.
Dr. J, until next Tuesday. Hot Topics from the Soul.
Thank you so much again.
Thank you all.
You're welcome.